evening, everyone. Welcome to Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou. Surgery, it is a word many people do not want to hear when it comes to their medical care. Having to undergo surgery can be stressful and often a cause for concern. Some procedures are more challenging than others, but with the proper medical facilities, adequate resources and expertise, a surgery is often safe. However, the World Health Organization says 5 billion people lack access to safe, timely and affordable surgical care and anesthesia worldwide. In low and middle income countries, 9 out of 10 people cannot access even the most basic surgical services. On the program today, we will discuss safe surgeries and the challenges and opportunities in sub-Saharan Africa. Joining us in the studio for more is Dr. Ife Shofola, facial, plastic and reconstructive surgeon and trustee of the Foundation for Special Surgery. Dr. Shofola is also a co-founder of the foundation. Dr. Shofola, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Such a pleasure to have you here with us.
Thank you.
So we'll talk all about safe surgery, what's happening on the continent. But first, we have this report by Voice of America's reporter Art Chimes. Take a listen.
In its report published by The Lancet, the group says people are dying from conditions easily treated in the operating room, such as hernia, appendicitis, obstructed labor, and serious fractures. Stanford University surgery professor Thomas Weiser, a member of the Lancet Commission, says the need is great.
There are probably about 143 million operations that are needed just to meet basic needs in low and middle income countries. There are probably about 5 billion people that don't have access to safe, timely surgery with protection against catastrophic expenditure. And so those are, you know, pretty big numbers.
The Lancet Commission notes remarkable gains in global health over the last quarter century, but says surgery has not kept up with advances in other areas.
You can't achieve universal health care if you don't incorporate surgery.
Harvard Medical School's John Mira is one of the lead authors of the Lancet paper. Mira said increasing the availability of surgical treatments is not as simple as providing bed nets designed to protect against malaria. Surgery requires trained staff, proper facilities, and sterile instruments, but also reliable electricity, a system for getting patients to often distant hospitals, and a business model that does not bankrupt those who need an operation. The report suggests spending an additional $300 to $420 billion on surgery between now and 2030. That's a lot of money, but Mira says the Lancet Commission calculated each dollar spent would return $3 or $4 in economic benefit from lives saved and people returned to productive good health.
When you look at cost effectiveness in terms of dollars spent for welfare gains, for the positive impact on human beings, surgery is every bit as cost effective as any of those other aspects.
There's no one best path for improving access to surgery, and the report cites several diverse countries, including Mexico and Rwanda, as having taken steps toward better availability of surgical services. For VOA News, this is Art Chimes reporting.
Dr. Shofola, again, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so glad.
Now, you heard the report by VOA's Art Chimes. What is your reaction? I mean, when we look at the case of access to safe surgeries in low and middle income countries, it's really a problem.
Yes, it is a real problem. I can't even really quantify the impact that this problem has on society. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, the sub-Saharan governments have focused a lot of their attention on infectious diseases.
Yes.
You know, they have all these policies that address infectious diseases such as malaria, guinea worm, and the likes.
Mm-hmm.
And so with their focus on those grand issues, they have tended to neglect surgical care,
mm-hmm.
even basic to, you know, complex surgical care. And as the study has just elucidated, the economic impact is significant. The morbidity on the population is significant.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the economic impact, there's the actual physical personal impact on
yes.
every individual life.
Yes.
And we should not forget about that these are people's lives that we're dealing with, not so much the economy, but yes, actual individual lives.
And that's something, yeah, I say very often when, yeah, we hear the statistic, you know, mm-hmm, 10 billion people, 900 million people. I always say, you know, behind these numbers, there are real stories, correct, real people, you know, yes, experts such as yourself that are able to meet these people on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm, can really attest to the fact that these issues are important. Surgery, it's already a big problem to hear that you have to do surgery, right? It doesn't matter how minor it is. And now having to do it in an environment where everything is not there.
Yes.
It's very, very difficult. Sure. So what do you see when you go to, because you live in the U.S., but you also work on the continent, travel there very often. Talk to us about what you see. What do you see, like, in the life of people on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I would tell you that we see a lot of hopeful people, mm-hmm, first and foremost. Again, these are people who have a desire to live, mm-hmm, and to thrive if, mm-hmm, given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so, and this is not just in sub-Saharan Africa. We travel around the world to various places in Central America, South America, mm-hmm, but of course, Africa is dear to my heart.
Yes.
And in Africa, we find people who recognize that they have problems. They recognize that they have this physical ailment. And a lot of times, these ailments are very treatable. If caught early, if addressed at the right time, mm-hmm, and even in the advanced cases, if the appropriate surgical care is available, yeah, I mean, we are able to address this issue. So what do we see on the ground? We see a lack of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big things that we see. And what exactly are we talking about? We're talking about the hospitals or the surgical facilities that can actually deliver such surgical care.
Yes.
And this encompasses appropriate anesthesia, appropriate recovery, you know, the intensive care units, you know, the pharmacies, all of the above. And we were talking about from the moment you walk into the moment you go out.
Yes.
Yeah, everything is really important because when we talk about surgery, we talk about a team. It's a team effort. So these things are not really in place as such. Uh-huh. And so we find ourselves having to improvise to deliver this care during our medical missions. But what we have now done, or we have committed ourselves to do, is to raise the standard.
Okay.
Because you're performing surgery on the continent of Africa does not mean that you should perform substandard surgery.
Yes.
Okay, because every life is valuable. And yes, we believe wholeheartedly that every individual should have access to top surgical care. That is our premise. That's our focus. So there are some nations like Rwanda. I lead a team on the Face the Future Foundation to Rwanda every year. In fact, we're heading out there in February of this year, and this will be our ninth mission. Okay. And we have endeavored to build capacity through this whole process, and we have seen this whole endeavor evolve to the point where we are now performing surgeries in Rwanda on patients who have failed in the United States at a top institution in the United States.
Really?
Correct.
Wow.
Yes, so the narrative is changing.
That's good.
Okay, so what does that mean? That means that where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes.
And once we are given the tools to perform, we will actually deliver. And so with a visionary leadership that they have the visionary leadership that they have in Rwanda, we are now able to develop something that is long-lasting. And now we want to do that in Ghana by building our first real hospital, surgical subspecialty hospital in Ghana. Ghana has a stable government. We also have in Ghana I don't want to call it a prototype, but a sister facility there that is already performing spine surgery under such this type of arrangement that we're looking to implement.
That's exciting.
Yes.
And we definitely want to know more about this project and the type of surgeries that you will be performing. We're going to take a short break and we'll come back for more on our discussion on special surgeries and access to safe surgeries with our guest, Dr. Ife Shofola. Don't go away. We'll be right back. You are listening to Health Chat on the Voice of America. Today, we are discussing access to safe surgeries with our special guest, Dr. Ife Shofola. He is a facial and plastic reconstructive surgeon and a co-founder of the Foundation for Special Surgeries. Dr. Shofola, so where were we? We were talking about one of your projects in Ghana. In building a state-of-the-art facility for surgery. And it's possible. I mean, it's not because it's in Africa that, you know, we have to just go with facilities that are not up there. And talk to us about what you are doing and how you plan to do that.
Okay. So we thank you again for asking the question. We are in the process of constructing a state-of-the-art hospital in Ghana. And I'll just give you a little bit of a background. I personally have a lot of experience in building and running hospitals, as we have done so in Houston, Texas, where we built surgical hospitals that could keep patients overnight or for a few days, having several hospital beds, you know, about 30 hospital beds.
Okay.
The reason I'm bringing this up is that we're talking about building a surgical hospital, not a general hospital.
That's important
okay.
to me, yes.
So the surgical hospital focuses on a high quality, top-notch, you know, state-of-the-art surgeries. And so we'll get the right equipment, we'll have the right staff,
okay.
And also the right platform to train the next generation. And so our organization, the Foundation for Special Surgery, is a 501c3 organization, which is able to receive donations from partners, corporations, from individuals, people who feel that they want to be part of this journey. This journey, of course, is bigger than every individual,
yes.
Because it's designed to impact generations of people. So our first hospital will be in Ghana, and then we hope to build similar hospitals in the four regions of Africa. And so why is this important? Well, if one creates an environment where they can actually deliver the most complicated surgeries,
mm-hmm.
then we'll be able to train the brilliant surgeons that are on the continent to perform those surgeries,
yes.
and also have the equipment in which to deliver such procedures. And what does that do? That keeps these brilliant surgeons on the continent.
So brain drain is also being addressed.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And these surgeons would actually live on the continent,
okay.
train the next generation
yes.
also, because they'll have the facility, they'll have the incentive to do so, and the support. And then at the end of the day, deliver what it is that they are trained to deliver, which is top-notch surgical care to the population.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Shofola, when you go on the continent
yeah.
and you see some of the cases that you have to address, you know, I'm African, you are also African originally,
yes.
and we are faced sometimes with certain beliefs that
yes.
Delay... sometimes yes. access to care.
Yes.
What are some of the conditions, not to name them all, but if you can tell us one or two examples of very basic conditions that people think maybe it's a bad spirit, maybe, you know?
I'll give you one classic example that I had during one of my missions in Nigeria. There was a 17-year-old kid who everyone thought was a village idiot because he could not speak. And each time he tried to speak with me, the village members will nudge me and tell me, don't worry, he's not, you know, he's not all there. Please don't be offended. And I looked at him very carefully and I said, something is not right here. So I asked him a question and he tried to speak. And I said, I said, wait a minute, open your mouth and stick your tongue out. He was tongue-tied. Wow. The most basic procedure that one could do.
Tongue-tied, meaning his tongue was...
Yes, he had ankyloglossia. His tongue was tethered to the bottom of his mouth, basically.
Wow.
And so he could not even stick his tongue out, and as such, he could not really speak. He could not enunciate. So I immediately clamped the frenulum.
Yes.
And snipped the frenulum, and I asked him how he was doing, and he spoke to me.
Unbelievable.
And everybody went wild.
That didn't even take you 3 minutes.
2 seconds. Everybody went wild. And he kept following me everywhere. Cut more. I said, no, I've cut enough.
Now he wants you to cut everything.
He said, cut some more. I said, no, I've cut enough. So something as simple as that.
Wow.
We come across that, you know, once in a while. Then we also come across some cases like the clefts. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very common problem. You see adults with cleft lips and cleft palates, and then you also see people with tumors in the head and neck that affect the jaw. These are odontogenic tumors, or tumors that come from the teeth, basically. And they just grow slowly over the years, and they become destructive. And so in such cases, we need to basically excise the jaw and then reconstruct the jaw by going to the patient's leg to harvest a bone. It's called a fibula, free flap.
Yes.
It's a free tissue transfer where you take the fibula bone in the leg and reshape it and then sew it into the, reconstruct the jaw and then sew the vessels into the neck. And then you know, you place teeth in there and they're able to function.
Wow.
Yeah. So these are the things that we do, you know. So the complex microvascular free flaps are being performed now in Rwanda. We do them every year that we go there, and we have been training the staff there to go further. There are other patients who may have been born with some congenital problem where the jaw is not well developed, and we have to do simple procedures like simple but intricate procedures like what we call a distraction osteogenesis, where you slowly regenerate the jaw by making a cut in the bone, putting some implants in there, and just advance the bone a little bit every day until the jaw develops. And these things are very available.
Fascinating. Yeah. So Dr. Shofola, when you look at... what we are faced with on the continent in access to safe surgeries, where do you think, what do you think is the most challenging in Africa in terms of the biggest threat actually to safe surgery on the continent?
Again, the facilities and the training.
Okay.
Safe anesthesia is one thing. I have had to endure situations during medical missions where the anesthesia was not the most appropriate, but we're able to get through to deliver care.
Okay.
So again, the facility which encompasses the whole package, meaning anesthesia, the anesthesia equipment, the operating room equipment, and things like that. Now, I will have to say also that I'm sure that there are several countries that are actually building hospitals. But they end up becoming white elephants. Why? Because they don't have the people to staff the hospitals and use the hospitals.
Yes.
Okay, so we have these big hospitals, some in Nigeria, some in Ghana, and they're not functional.
Yes. Okay? I've seen it, yes.
So we come with a different mindset. We come with a mindset that, first of all, we have a lot of experience. As I have mentioned earlier, I have experience in running hospitals and owning hospitals. So we know that we have to build something that is sustainable.
Yes.
Okay, so we generate some revenue. We provide pro bono care for those who cannot afford. We believe that, I believe that, you know, the access to healthcare is something that we, our people, should have.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Here in the U.S., there's an argument as to whether healthcare is a right or whether it's a privilege. Uh-huh. Well, it's you can look at it different ways.
That's true.
You know, what I would just say, it's a privilege that should be available to all.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It should be available to all. Very basic. I mean, yeah. If you don't feel well, everything else does not matter. Nothing else matters because health is so fundamental.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. And I think you made a good point earlier how governments on the continent focus so much, very often on diseases, you know, infectious diseases and everything, and surgery seems to be neglected. So you are organizing through the Foundation for Special Surgery, is organizing, which you're the co-founder, a gala.
Correct.
On, you know, talk to us about why this gala is important and what you hope to accomplish through this endeavor.
Well, we hope, first of all, to increase the awareness of what we are trying to do. We want to emphasize how we are different from other organizations that run humanitarian medical missions. They go there, they perform the surgeries, and they come back. They feel good about themselves, and yes, they do make an impact. But what we're looking to do is to create a sustainable change.
Very important.
Okay, we want to build capacity on the continent. Mm-hmm. And so this gala is designed to increase the awareness and also to receive donations for the construction of our first hospital, and also to partner with like-minded individuals and corporations who could donate their funds to see this come to fruition. There's a commitment to make this happen, and this is what I've spent most of my professional life, you know, trying to accomplish. And I think we are at the right place at the right time, and we have the right thrust, and the opportunity is there. So we'll strike when the iron is hot, and essentially look to the next generation for the ability to continue to propagate this effort.
Because follow-up is important. A lot of time we see people going on medical mission. They have this particular project they do, but then there's no follow-up, or maybe the project dies down the road because there's nothing to sustain it. Yeah. So when we think about this specialty hospital for surgical care, what are you projecting in terms of when it will be up and running?
We hope that we hope to break ground this you know, this fall or early next year.
Okay.
And we anticipate that with the construction, it should take about a year to 18 months. We already have donations of equipment from Germany.
Okay.
We have, of course, the staff. Staff surgeons who have all pledged their time, and this is not a fleeting pledge. We have actually seen them really want to continue with us. And one of my co-founders and the leader of this organization, Professor Kofi Boahene at Johns Hopkins, we came together and really conceived this idea. We said, incidentally, we are the first two surgeons of African descent from the continent to be board certified by the American Board of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery. And that's the highest board in the world, I believe. And myself and Kofi are now the first and second African directors of the American Board of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery.
That's fantastic. You make the continent proud.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. So we are committed. So we say we want to open the eyes of facial plastic surgery to the continent.
Yes.
We want to be the surgeons that make a sustainable difference.
Yes.
And so it's one step at a time, but with your help, with the help of well-meaning individuals, we can make giant leaps.
Absolutely. And where can people find more information on the work that you're doing?
You can go to our website, www.foundationforspecialsurgery.org. You can click on there, see what we're doing. Uh-huh. You can buy tickets or you can make a donation. I think if you are in the D.C. area, the 23rd of November is the date for our second gala. And we have a program that will really excite you.
Oh,
you come
okay.
with your dancing shoes. we're going to have a band called Chop Teeth. That's an Afro-funk band.
Afro-funk, how
yes,
about
yes, yes, yes. Those who are familiar with Fela. Fela Anikula Pokuti, yes.
Course.
So Chop Teeth was named after one of his songs. And so this band plays Afro-funk beats.
Okay.
So I really encourage you
so
all to
So lots
come.
Of fun
yeah,
to look
absolutely,
forward to.
Absolutely, yes.
So on a lighter note, Dr. Shofola, you are a facial and plastic reconstructive surgery. It's
correct.
Such a long title.
Yeah.
I'm sure people see you and they always have something they ask you. Like, can you make me look younger, better? What is this? What are some of the silliest things that people ask you? This is very, very much on the lighter note.
They come and say, what do I need? So depending on who it is, if it's a friend, I'm a joke. Oh, there's no hope. I'm not a magician.
That's true.
You're on your own.
But it's fascinating.
Yes, it is.
It's really a fascinating field. I know that in America, you know, you hear a lot about plastic surgery. It's a big business, a big deal. Yeah. On the continent, though, we don't hear very much about plastic surgery.
I would tell you, That is a fact. We don't hear much about that. But
okay. Is it because people hide it?
Well, you know, that is twofold.
Okay.
One is that, let us clear up this fact.
Great.
That
let's do that.
About plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm.
People love it on the continent. They want it.
Okay.
Okay. But it's not available.
Okay.
A lot of our patients that we receive here in the U.S. come from Nigeria, Ghana, from all over.
Okay.
Oh, they want nose jobs, they want facelift, they want all these things, and some need some body contouring.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's a demand for it. Our women and our men want to look good. There's no difference from other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what we do is we do ethnic sensitive surgeries, meaning surgeries that are more congruent with the ethnicity that define beauty for that ethnic group.
What does this mean, though?
Yeah, it means, for instance, bless his soul, people cringe when we talk about Michael Jackson having a nose job.
Okay.
See, what he did at the end of the day was that his rhinoplasty was not, you know, did not match his face.
Okay.
Okay. So there are some beauty standards that we recognize in our African women.
Okay.
And these beauty standards are areas that we like to preserve. And so if we do a nose job or rhinoplasty, we want that nose to conform with those beauty standards.
Makes sense.
Okay?
I see what you said.
Yeah. So that's what...
So I can't come and see Dr. Shofola make my eyes look like an Asian woman because I love their eyes. I can't say that. You tell me no, keep your eyes as they are because I get it. All right, that's a good one. A good one.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Shofola, we're going to wrap soon, but finally, just to finish, what a word of advice when it comes to safe surgeries on the continent, some people who don't have access, or any word that you'd like to share on behalf of the foundation?
Well, what I would like to say is that there are people on the continent who can't afford surgery, and there are those who can afford surgery.
Uh-huh.
And those who can afford tend to go overseas. They go to places like India. They go to, you know, places, you know, the Middle East, and some may come to the U.S. or Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I would like to say is that there's hope.
There is hope.
Because we are here.
Okay.
And we're here to make it happen.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. So there is hope. Dr. Shofola, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners for joining us. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Palca. The second hour of